You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 008 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show on 740thefan.com and KFGO.com. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunderson, my co-host Brad the White Shadow Jones. If you want to comment on this podcast, get into it right away. Where you have Twitter accounts that you can follow us at. Mine is at PintoKFGO. Brad's is.
And I'm at the Bison Guy.
If you want to email us, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. This is also available on iTunes. We should get that out there right away.
Yes.
Just type the Pinto and White Shadow Show into your search engine when you're looking on iTunes, and the podcast is there.
Mm-hmm.
We do this podcast. We record it every Sunday. We post it every Monday, and today is hot, like 93
yes.
degrees out. So Brad and I coordinated when it came to dress codes for this podcast. We both came in cutoffs.
I walk into the studio.
Cut off shirts.
Gunderson's rocking the Daisy Dukes over here.
Yeah, right.
But a little distracting. But I walk into the building, and I see Gunderson pointing to his arms, kind of doing like an old school Rob Van Dam thing on
yes.
his showing off his quote guns.
What did
like
you say?
BB guns.
What did you say when you walked in? It was
Suns out, guns out, baby. We gotta make it. We gotta put on a show here.
No, not at all. I didn't even realize. Like, I felt really kind of dressed down. And my boss is here doing work on Sunday.
Nice.
And I wore a sweatshirt in just so I wasn't wearing the cutoff that I am wearing. And we don't really have to discuss what's on this t-shirt. Because
yeah, it's probably a bad idea.
It's something I bought in college that I, for some reason, still have in the workout drawer for all my shirts. So I really need to get rid of it. But yeah, I come in and I'm like, oh, my boss is here and I'm wearing these clothes. It looks great.
You know, and have you ever, and maybe you've been driving down the street or out walking around and seeing the people that really should not be walking around in public wearing cutoff shirts.
Okay.
I think I'm definitely one of those guys.
So I'm on my way here.
Yeah.
Probably about 2:30. I was rolling in to do some work before the podcast went, and I'm driving down 25th Street, headed north on 25th Street, just came off of I-94. And walking towards the I-94 exit is a guy in, and I kid you not, ladies and gentlemen, a Speedo and a backpack.
Yeah.
It is that hot out that guy has been reduced to wearing a Speedo.
It's funny
with a backpack.
Because I was coming up 25th as well, and I saw a guy wearing, and I, you don't know the life situation here, so I don't want to make too much fun, but just the pure fashion statement that this making was interesting. He was wearing like these tan
workout boots.
He's wearing rolled up green shorts.
I thought they were
a
Speedo.
Tank top that he had fashioned into almost looking like a bra.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Same guy. I saw the same guy.
It was inspiring is what it was. I may walk out of the building like that just for the fun of it.
That guy was unbelievable. That is the fashion sense that I wish
yes.
I could have. But it is hot outside. We haven't really moved. We haven't done a lot all day. You and I just kind of looked over the questions that I put forward.
We're going to heat things up here. Oh, You've got some over-unders on Brock Jensen.
We're
going to
get into
gonna,
it. So, yeah. Without any further ado, let's get into it, and we'll start with
local.
Okay, so obviously we are. You know what? That was kind of quiet. Let's do it again.
Local.
There it is. So we're, 5 days away from the kickoff between
Kansas
State,
like you
University,
don't know.
North Dakota
yeah,
State
sure.
on Friday. In fact, I will be down in Manhattan on Friday. I'll be helping out with the Jack Michael Show on 740, doing some reports. We're going to hear from the Manhattan Mercury beat writer, Josh Kinder. The guy covers the Kansas State football team in this podcast. You'll also be hearing from him on Friday as well. We'll all be from Bill Snyder Family Stadium in the new press box. Going to have a lot of things up on KFGO.com, pictures, articles, all that as well. Plus, during the game, I will be live tweeting, not play-by-play, because I believe the NCAA frowns on the play-by-play during the Twitter, but if you want to have a discussion with me, at Pinto KFGO. So,
and I'll be there too. I won't be there, but I will be tweeting, and Gunderson and I, I'm sure, will be
going back and
arguing
forth.
It'll be interesting to see, because I have to work and won't be able to make the game, but what the difference is between what you're seeing live and versus what you see on TV.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So. And of course, you can listen to the game on KFGO. We have a downloadable app. NDSU does not make us black them out during the regular season, which is great. So you can listen to it online at KFGO.com. Nice. Or on the RFM app. And so all of that, We kind of cleaned house there. So what we're going to do before we talk about Kansas State, it's going to be a pretty Bison football heavy show just because we are so close to the opening of the 2013 season. We're going to discuss the Bison, just kind of break down the team in general as we look at them from the 2013 standpoint. Here are some of the things that I want to talk to you, Brad, about, and we're going to start out with the Missouri Valley Football Conference schedule. And do you think NDSU will stumble at all throughout this schedule? And so I'll let you go ahead and answer that question, and we'll go from there.
You know, and I should preface this too. As we go through, we're going to try not to duplicate what we've been. We talked the defense. We talked about the offense each of the last 2 weeks. So
right, we're looking at the team in general here.
So we'll try to avoid any major reproductions of what we've done. But you know, do I think they'll stumble in the Missouri Valley somewhere? Yes.
Okay.
And but where? I don't have the first something clue, as I believe the great Jack Nicholson once said in A Few Good Men. I don't know. And you had a blog post about that, about how, you know what, you just don't know. It was Youngstown State 2 years ago. It was Indiana State last year.
Right.
The team, there's going to be a team that's probably going to come up and knock the Bison off that we're just not going to expect. I'll want to look at the matchups a little bit closer as the season goes on and see what these other teams do, but it's going to be the game where we lose the turnover battle. If it happens, it's going to be because of turnovers.
To me, I don't think they do stumble. I think this is the year, in my mind, that they get through the Missouri Valley untouched.
Flashes of 2007.
Right, against South Dakota State down in Brookings. But, you know, to me,
it was that run's supposed best team. That was Steve Walker,
right.
Joe Mays. That was all those guys' senior years. Heckendorf senior year. Yeah, and that was the team that was supposed to run the table. They take care of business against the Gophers. They, you know, this was going to be it. And then they stumble right at the end. Now, is that going to happen in the Missouri Valley? I think it'll happen at some point. It's a tough conference. It's a battle week to week, and I think somebody's going to get them.
Well, let's go through this. We both think that they're going to enter the Missouri Valley. The first game is on September 28th in South Dakota in Brookings against the Jackrabbits. We both think that they're going to enter it 2-1 in the non-conference. We both believe that the Kansas State game, which we'll get into, is going to be an L. We think that Fair State and Delaware State are both going to be W's at home. And then that South Dakota State game.
You and I might see snaps in the Ferris State game.
That's highly likely.
I think it really is.
They might even move Esley Thornton back to quarterback just to see how he is, you know, doing there. South Dakota State, to me, poses the biggest problem on this schedule as far as a bump in the road.
It's interesting timing for that game because
they got
Cupcake bye week. Cupcake, isn't that how the schedule works with that? But man, they should be up for that game. By that week, you think they're ready for some competition.
Oh, yeah.
I don't see South Dakota State. I see two teams. I see either Youngstown, because it seems like they're always tough, or I see Northern Iowa.
Okay, the Youngstown State game is a November 16th game in Youngstown on the road. Northern Iowa is the next week after South Dakota State, October 5th in Fargo. I had a friend.
Those are my two.
Yeah, I had a friend tell me that he believed it would be Northern Iowa as well. I don't agree with that because I think Northern Iowa, to me, they just don't have the same kind of clout that they did. When NDSU beat Northern Iowa in 2011, was it? Or was it?
I don't remember.
The one they beat in the Dome where they had the sack, the fumble, they picked it up and ran it in for a touchdown in the Dome. I believe that was 2011. I think that was the first year, the first national championship year. I think that game, to me, signified the changing of the guard in the Missouri Valley. I think it went from Northern Iowa as the team to beat to now we have to deal with NDSU.
Okay, well, NDSU is still the team to beat in the Missouri Valley. I don't think that's a question. But
no, but I
still think that Northern Iowa is perennially good enough and tough enough to be able to sneak a win from NDSU. You would have made that same look.
Okay. Not in the Fargo Dome.
Okay, so neither did Indiana State. Neither did Youngstown State 2 years ago.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I see where you're coming from, but
I'm not saying it's likely, but I'm saying if it's going to happen, I think it's one of those two games.
Okay.
And we can get into that as it gets a little bit closer.
We can.
To me,
as we look down the schedule, it's either Southern Illinois, to me, has always posed problems to NDSU because especially for NDSU offensively, they struggle against the Salukis and Dale Lennon and the 3-4, and it's just never something that's easy to play against. And then Indiana State, I don't think that's going to be an issue because we saw what NDSU did to Youngstown State last year. And it was 48-7. They just completely demolished the Penguins.
Mm-hmm.
I think Indiana State's going to be kind of the same. I do like the Youngstown State bit, Brad, where he said they're going to be in Ohio on November 16th. That's going to be a tough game. To me, I'm looking Southern Illinois or South Dakota State are the two ones to me. Okay. I think if they're going to lose, which goes completely against what Jensen's done for the last 2 years, but if they're going to lose in the conference, those are the two games on their own. Southern Illinois is a big stretch because they're not good at all.
Okay.
But you have to remember, NDSU hasn't really done, I think outside of maybe 1 year, they put up 50 points on Southern Illinois a couple years back. But last year was a struggle against Southern Illinois. It was only a 23-17 victory, I believe, over the Salukis. I think we could see the same thing this year. But that South Dakota State game, to me,
okay,
that to me is the biggest one, the biggest question mark where, I don't know, they could lose. To me, that's...
I'm smelling some sort of wager here.
Okay.
For the ongoing wager. What? If the Bison lose a Missouri Valley game, I've got Northern Iowa and Youngstown.
Are we
going
to pick two teams?
I think we just the two that we discussed.
Okay.
Northern Iowa and Youngstown, you get SDSU and Southern Illinois.
Yeah, and you have them losing at home, which they have the last 2 years.
So, and again, I don't know that I have them losing, but if they lose, I think it's one of those two games.
Okay, so we locked it in. Boom,
let's lock
done.
It in.
It's in. It'll be on the ongoing wager. You can check that out on KFGO.com, our blog, our show blog. It's called the Pinto and White Shadow show blog, coincidentally. And we take every wager we usually talk about during a podcast, and we put it up there, give you some audio, and let you kind of
We're still looking for punishments.
We are looking for punishments, but it's the fall season, so we have some time to kind of grow.
True, but
and
if you have any,
things out.
Send them to the Twitter.
Send them to the Facebook. Send them to the Facebook email.
But yeah, get those into us. We want to find ways, some way to humiliate the person that ends up losing. So, I mean, we don't want to make Gunderson do anything too terrible, but let's make it embarrassing for him.
Some kind of punishment.
Yeah.
If it's not so much as we're not going to get tattoos. We already discussed
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no.
Tattoos are not going to happen.
No.
All right, let's look at this team, and we are going to talk a little bit offensive, defensive here, but let's talk about who you think. Actually, Brad, we'll start with the defense.
Okay.
This defense is totally stacked. I mean,
yep.
There's so many players.
We've
on
talked
this.
About that. Yep.
Who do you think the defensive MVP of this team will be? And I put out a couple names here.
Yep.
Marcus Williams, Grant Olsen, or, in your mind, somebody else.
I mean, I said the most attention, and I put three names down. I said the person that's going to get the most attention is going to be Marcus Williams. I think the person who is going to actually be the MVP will probably be Olsen.
Okay.
My dark horse is I went back and forth and settled on Jerick, but either Jerick or Kyle Emanuel.
Yeah, those two had an unbelievable season last year when you look at the stats, tackles for losses, sacks.
So
and really kind of went under the radar because when you play in the Missouri Valley, it's a pretty balanced offensive attack coming at them. You don't play against teams that want to throw for 4,000, 5,000 yards like you do in other conferences. So
and when they got when they had the opportunity to pass rush, though, they buried people.
Yeah, it was really no contest when it came to those things. I have to agree with you 100% in this for the first two guys. I think you're right when Williams is going to get the most attention, and I think Olsen will be the MVP. But when you want to talk about a dark horse, Colton Hegel. Guy's coming
off
a big major knee surgery, major knee injury suffered against Colorado State, but you haven't heard him about, oh, he's a step behind or he's a step slower when it comes to practice.
The only thing I would say is when's the last time that a safety has been the MVP of a defense?
And usually that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
But Colton Hegel to me plays a completely different type of safety position where he's more of a fourth linebacker in the way they like to use him. He's a great tackler. He no fear when it comes to him. So you're going to see him more get a lot of tackles, cause a lot of, you know,
I mean, against running teams, he'll be up there. See, I don't think he'll be in the backfield. I think he'll be right behind he's going to be behind the linebackers. So I don't know that I see him in the backfield a ton. I just don't see him putting up enough numbers to really warrant an MVP-type discussion. I think he'll be important, but I think the guys that are considered MVP, it's linebackers or it's going to be the DNs.
Well, the reason I say Colton Hegel is how important was he in the first run at the national championship? I mean, I want to say against...
Okay, you want me to turn the tables? How much did they miss him last year?
Yeah, it's very true. This team is so deep that those things happen. You know, Christian Dudzik, and that's the thing. It worked out perfectly because Christian Dudzik made the move from corner to safety and essentially took over for, you know, kind of took over that safety spot.
No,
as
Bobby
the star,
Ullman.
Well, no, as the star safety for the team. Bobby Ullman, yeah, played.
I would argue they didn't have a star safety. I don't know that I would put Dudzik as a star safety. I think their safeties just did their job and didn't let people get behind them.
I think Christian Dudzik, to me, was the best safety on the team and was probably one
that
of the...
That doesn't make you a star.
He's probably the third or second best, depending on the game, defensive secondary player they had, night in, night out. To me, he was really important. You're just saying that, okay, so he's good, he played, but there's no really significance to him. They could have anybody that steps in for him.
I think of players that could fill in. I think Dudzik is one of the guys that could be a little more easily replaced than others.
Really?
And I like Dudzik. I really do. I like him. I thought that even when he was at corner, I thought he took a little bit more of a bad rap than he should have. But I the safeties to me aren't quite as important to this Bison defense as some of the other spots.
And see, I'm a huge safety guy, and I think the combination, this is the first year we'll see Dudzik and Hegel play together a significant amount, because Colorado State was, what, third or second game into the season for NDSU last year? I want to say third. We'd have to look it up. But even so, that was, you know, Dudzik was just getting going at safety because of the switchover, and then you had, it was the second game in, by the way, and then you have Colton Hegel go down with the knee injury. And they did miss him. They didn't really miss a beat with him because of Bobby Ullman filling in. But that was our question. Who do you think the MVP is going to be? And we both think it's going to be Olsen. Looking at the offense, who do you believe, Brad? And you said last week that you thought there was only going to be one running back that gets over 1,000 yards. All right. Who's it going to be? John Crockett or Sam Ojeri?
I'll say Ojeri.
Why?
I think he's the most consistent. I think he's more consistent. I think Crockett's a little more of a home run hitter, but I like the consistency of Sam Ojeri.
Okay. I'm going to...
I know you're going to say both.
No, both, yes, yeah. But if I had to pick one,
yep,
it'd be Crockett. Okay. I think Crockett's...
He's special.
I think he's on the verge of a breakout year. Okay. I really do. And it's good. It's tough because they share the carries, but when it comes down to it, as the season goes on, I have a feeling that we're going to see Crockett get a lot of carries in important parts of the ball game, and I think, in my opinion, which it probably won't come true because NDSU just does not divert from the playbook. If it's Ojeri's turn to run the series, it's going to be Ojeri, regardless if he's running well or not. I think Crockett might force the hand a little bit of Vegan this year. That's how I feel going into this season, that he's going to make Vegan say, all right, Crockett's hot, we got to go with him, as you would, you know, hot hand when it comes to basketball, whatever. I think they're going to have to go with Crockett. So, to me, that's how I see it coming. I think Crockett would be the guy, if you were going to go over 1,000 yards, would be him. But he, I think, is on the verge of having a big season,
too. So, in other words,
really,
you'll say Crockett finishes with more yards than Ojeri.
Yeah.
That's your...
That would be my...
Maybe a little better way
to put it.
Yep.
All right, let's talk Brock Jensen, as if we haven't talked enough about him already. To me, he's going to be kind of the vocal point of the season, because if NDSU has a couple stumbles, especially if the... If they start the season 2-2 and the quarterback play is not the greatest and they lose to, say, South Dakota State, I think he's going to face a little heat. I really do, because his stats...
That's probably not wrong. Yeah.
His stats last year weren't impressive when you look at them. They were good enough to win.
Yep.
Turned the ball over a significant amount of time in two games.
Yep.
But over the long season, he was consistent. My question to you is over-under on some Brock Jensen stats for this year. And so we'll start out with over-under, and this will be in the ongoing wager.
Okay.
Over-under, Brock Jensen, 65%.
You mean any that we disagree on?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
65% completion percentage.
I would say under. I'm going to say under 65%. I don't think... Completing over 65% is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know enough about how many receivers they're going to use, how healthy they'll be. I don't know that I feel quite confident enough to say over 65%.
Jensen, sophomore year, 67% completion percentage.
Okay. Of course, he was in the 70s for a lot of the year.
Yeah, he did have Warren Holloway. He was unbelievable that year.
Yeah.
That was a good year for him. To me, he fell off. Doesn't matter. But you're going to say under?
Yeah.
I'm going to go under as well.
Yeah.
I think Jensen goes under 65% this year. Doesn't mean that he's going to have a bad season in that regard, but I think it's under 65.
I agree.
Interceptions. Over, under 6.5 picks this year.
Oh, over.
Really?
Yeah. That's if he can lose that bet by averaging less than one interception every other game.
So you're saying he'd throw an interception every other game?
Yeah, he could throw an interception every other game, which would be really good to only throw an interception every other game. And it's like an NFL quarterback throwing 8 picks in a season. That's really, really good and still lose an over-under at 6.5. I will take the over.
I'm going to take the under because
really,
this team does not take chances when it comes to passing. Jensen has proven that he's not a quarterback that takes chances.
Yeah.
I just don't think there's going to be a lot of interceptions he throws. Last year was an anomaly, especially when you think of 2 games in 3 weeks that he threw 6 picks in. He threw 7 all year last year, I believe, 7 or 8, and 6 of them happened in 2 games. But I am going to
look at you arguing for Brock Jensen. Oh, we've come so far.
I'm going to go under when it comes to
okay.
interceptions at 6.5. So okay. I think it's under. Passing yards. Over under 2,100 yards passing for Brock Jensen.
Over.
Really?
Over. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Last year, he only threw for, let's see if I have the stats here, only threw for, 2,331. Yeah. And the year before that, he threw for 2,500.
Over.
Okay.
Over.
I'm going to agree with you.
Okay.
That
would be, of all the numbers that you have listed here, that would be the one that I have the most confidence in, is over 2,100 yards.
I'm going to go over as well. And that's where we're going to leave it, because I don't really have much to say about it. I think it's just going to go over.
Yeah.
Over under 15.5 touchdowns thrown this year for Brock Jensen.
That was probably the one that I struggled with the most, because touchdowns, and if anybody who plays fantasy, touchdowns are the single hardest thing to predict.
Especially with this team, because they do
38 rushing touchdowns last year, 42 years ago, and I may have those numbers reversed. I know it's 78 touchdowns and 40 and 38 the last 2 years.
Yeah, you have it reversed. It was 38 in 2011, 40 last year. Okay. Even so.
And that's all. And Jensen's got a handful of those too.
Yes,
I mean,
he does.
This team does not throw a lot when they get down in the red zone. They run the ball and they hammer the ball in. That being said, I still think I'm gonna take the over and feel very not confident about it.
You're
gonna take the under. I know you will, but I'm going to take the over.
Okay. Here's what I'll tell the fans. Here's what I'll do.
So let's break this down from a fundamental standpoint.
So in his sophomore season in 2011, his best year as a starter, in my opinion, threw 14 touchdowns, 4 picks, 67% completion. Last year, as a junior, 17 touchdowns, 8 picks, only completed 61%, and had a stretch where he looked really bad. Towards the end of the season, it was getting pretty pear-shaped for him because he wasn't throwing over 100 yards. His percentage was going down. He started to trail off towards the end of the season last year. But even so, when you talk about the number 15.5 for this offense, you just saw it. Jensen had 17 last year. He had 14 the year before. Although he was more successful and had a higher completion percentage when he was a sophomore.
Touchdowns are just tough to predict.
And they really are, especially with this team, because they just don't throw a lot of touchdowns.
So you're taking the under?
I'm taking the under.
Okay.
I have to go under. I don't think it's going to be by a lot. He might only get 15.
Okay.
But I'm taking the under on this one.
So we disagreed on 2.
Yes.
Correct? So we disagreed. I've got over 6.5 interceptions. You've got under. And then I have over 15.5 touchdowns, and you have under.
Right.
Those are the 2 bets that we'll have that we have locked in.
Yeah, locked in. This will go on the ongoing wager on our Pinto and White Shadow show block on KFGO.com. All right. So we've covered the team. I think we both believe, Brad, if we can just wrap this up, we both believe this team is destined again for Frisco. I think that it's really, to me, I think we're going to be hearing,
next stop, Frisco, Texas.
Thank you, Scotty.
I think we're going to be hearing that come December.
There's so many, and Coach Bowl is the first one to admit, there's a fair amount of luck that goes into that. You got to have a couple of right bounces to the ball. So this team, if it came down to just the players on the field and nothing else, should make it to the national title game again. This team should be better than each of the last 2 teams.
And he said that before, that with experience, the team gets better. This is the most experienced team he's had. And so you're right. This team should be better just based on the fact that a majority of them are seniors. They've played.
Yep.
The seniors have been in every single FCS playoff game in school history. That's an amazing thing to think of. Brock Jensen's the only quarterback NDSU has had starting in FCS playoffs in their school history.
Yeah,
because they've only been in it for the last 3 years, obviously. But he's been the starting quarterback. The experience is unbelievable. You rarely get that in college football. You rarely have it work out so perfectly the way NDSU has. Not only that, you're talking about major injuries that you avoid before the season.
Yeah.
And you're talking about major injuries outside of Levon Perry and Colton Hegel to basically your key players you avoid during the season, which is really tough to do in the most physical sport that you can play.
And to not have them stack up at a position. There was one stretch, and I can't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago, where they had a little bit of anxiety at linebacker.
That was the year they went 3-8, because that was the year DJ McNorton.
Okay, well,
up.
That was before. So okay,
I
so
think
that was
it was that year
run.
They went 3-8.
It seems to me, and still in one of these, there was enough nervousness with it that there was a little nervousness about it. It didn't end up being anything too bad, but
well,
it's when
bad
those,
that year.
When those, I mean, after that though.
Oh yeah,
I mean, after that.
Receiver would be the only position depth wise that you're a little concerned about.
Yeah,
but they even so. They still talk about these freshmen,
with
people that they're going to rely on.
With receivers, I think they just have a lot of guys. We don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people, which equals depth. I just know that we just don't know if it's very good depth yet.
Right.
So I think the position that they least can afford it is linebacker.
Right. And with that, we'll transition into talking about Kansas State, previewing that a little bit.
Yeah.
I got a chance to talk to Craig Bull earlier this week. We won't play any of the interview. It'll be up on we have an interviews from the show we put up on the show blog that interview in its entirety will be up. It's about 3.5 minutes. But one of the questions that came up was health for this game. And still after 3 weeks of practice and a scrimmage, there is no significant injuries that he said have appeared. He believes everybody will be ready to go. And that was on Tuesday of last week. And so as we approach throughout this week, the practices are going to be pretty light. It's going to be a lot of game tape. It's going to be a lot of going through strategy. You know, do you think they're going to go after each other at all this week? I highly doubt it. They'll be, you know, conditioning, because I think you said, Brad, it's going to be, what, 93 degrees in Manhattan?
That's what it's according to the Weather Channel app. Yes, that's where it's
supposed
Friday,
to be. On Friday, August 30th. So it's going to be a hot one. But everybody sounds okay. Travis Beck had right shoulder surgery in the offseason to correct. I think he had a separated shoulder issue. The shoulder came out during practice, earlier in practice, but he's wearing a brace and things are going smoothly. So injury-wise, they're okay. Now, from the opposing team standpoint, Kansas State, I talked to Josh Kinder. He's the beat writer for the Manhattan Mercury down in Manhattan, Kansas, and had a nice talk with him earlier this week about Kansas State football. So without any further ado, let's get to that interview and get you kind of caught up on what's going on with Kansas State. Here with the sports editor for the Manhattan Mercury, Josh Kinder. And if you had listened to the Front Row show a couple weeks back on the Mighty 790 KFGO, I had Josh on to talk a little bit about Kansas State. And now we've got him back on to kind of catch up and, you know, freshen ourselves with what's going on with Kansas State. Josh, how you doing?
Doing great.
Perfect.
A week away here.
Yeah, I know. It is really close to being time for kickoff against August 30th. And the first question I have for you is the quarterback situation in Kansas State right now. Is it a still to be determined situation? And who do you see starting if it is a situation yet to be resolved?
I don't think we'll find out who starts that game until about 7:30 that night. I think we'll find out when they run out to the field. I think it's going to come down to that. Both will play. I think both will play in that game. And I don't think they've ruled out the possibility of using a two-headed quarterback system. And I think that's on the table this year. You know, everything we've heard is it's a dead heat between Jake Waters and Daniel Sams.
Who would you rather see start from a fan's perspective, if you will?
Man, it's tough. I mean, Daniel is so athletic. He's explosive. He got into the first two or three games a year ago in mop-up duty for Colin Klein and wasted no time, you know, working his way up the fans' favorite, you know, on their list, because I think three of his first four carries went for touchdowns.
Wow.
You know, and he untouched. You know, he gets the ball inside the 20, takes off, gets untouched right up the middle of the field and gets into the end zone. He's fast. He's one of the fastest guys on this football team. And when he's the quarterback, he's got the ball in his hand. So it's a nice little threat back there. But on the other side, Jake Waters has a pretty good arm. You know, the guy can, he can air it out. And he can run as well. It's just, they run, they're just different. You know, they're both, you know, they both have good arms. They both can run, but they both do it a little bit differently than each other. So, you know, it's not fair to say one's a runner, one's a passer, and leave it at that. They can both run this system, and they can both fit into this offense.
What is the biggest concern that you think K-State has when it comes to, is it the offense or is it the defense?
I think it's the defense. You know, the defense is totally unproven now. You know, they only have two returning starters, three if you count the nickelback. A lot of new faces this year. Not all new guys to the program, but new faces who haven't been every down starters. You know, like the defensive line, especially, they're replacing everybody across the front four and two of the three linebackers. You know, and some of those guys that are going to mix in there, guys who, you know, have been in the rotation in the past, but, you know, have just been, you know, they've been on the field for a handful of plays in a game. So that's a big question mark. I think offensively, I think this team's going to put up points. You know, I don't think it matters really who plays quarterback. I think they're going to put a lot of points up on the board, and, you know, it just kind of, and that's because of the offense. I mean, that's the offensive line, or really, I think. I mean, the offensive line, the entire unit comes back. It might be the best in the Big 12, one of the best in the country. You got starting tailback. He's back for his senior season, and you got two of your three starting receivers back this year. So whoever gets the quarterback job is going to, you know, they're getting the keys to a pretty nice ride for their first car.
What part of the defense needs to be addressed the most before the August 30th kickoff against North Dakota State?
Well, in the Big 12, you know, it's a pass-happy league. It has been, you know, the last 10 years. So I look at the secondary, and, you know, they've got one returning starter in the secondary, unless you count the nickelback. You know, both corners are gone, and that's going to be a position that will be picked on a lot in the Big 12. But on the same thing, on the same side, you know, the K-State has been able to play defense in this league because of what they've done. They've been able to do up front as well, you know, making up for maybe not the greatest athletes in the secondary, with a really good front four and good linebackers, you know, guys who can get pressure on the quarterback and, you know, in a way play pass defense by, you know, by putting them on the ground. So I think both are huge for this team. I mean, this is going to be the first real test that Coach Snyder's had off of success this time around in trying to replace a lot of names and a lot of faces. You know, he's done this before in the last 5 years, but, you know, he was doing it and he was replacing it with guys that were brought in from, you know, the previous coaching staff, you know, Ron Prince's players. Anyone who gets on the field now are guys that Bill Snyder recruited. So that's the real test, to see how these recruiting classes have panned out in the last 3 or 4 years based on, you know, the numerous bowl trips they've had.
Talking with Josh Kinder, the sports editor for the Manhattan Mercury, the North Dakota State University Bison, the Kansas State University Wildcats open up the 2013 season on Friday, August 30th, a 7:30 kickoff in front of possibly millions of fans on Fox Sports 1. And Josh, question I have for you here, what do you think Kansas State needs to do to beat North Dakota State in that August 30th game?
They have to avoid a slow start. This team, even with Colin Klein leading the way, you know, has had a tough go in that first week of really getting things going. Whether it's the offense making a mistake or if it's the coaching staff just being far too conservative too early, you know, and then, you know, forcing something toward the end of the game. You know, just 2 years ago, K-State needed all they could, you know, week one, you know. You know, so it's, who knows? They just can't get off to a slow start. I think they need to really get out quick, score some points fast, and be aggressive. You know, because this, you know, North Dakota State's not a slouch. And, you know, I'd be really surprised if they didn't come out with a pretty aggressive mindset, trying to get that game over with early.
So then, in your opinion, let's kind of switch the question a little bit. What do you think NDSU needs to do in order to beat Kansas State? I guess a better way to put that is, what is Kansas State's biggest weakness that NDSU can expose to go ahead and get the victory?
Well, I think it's that defense. You know, I challenge that defense. You know, put that defense on its heels and really stretch them out. And I think that's what, you know, that's the weakness right now. Is that, I mean, the defense could end up being really good. We don't know, though. And I think they need to, you know, really challenge defense, push them downfield. And then, you know, if they can survive, I think, you know, K-State's first onslaught on offense. You know, it's going to be a quick offense. You know, I think that's the best part of this team right now. And if they can, if North Dakota State can survive the onslaught, the you know, to start in that first quarter, not, you know, not get buried, who knows what could happen in that ball game?
What are the fan expectations from the K-State standpoint of this game? Do they expect the Wildcats to come out and just roll over the FCS Bison, or do they think that this is going to be more of a battle? Do they know that, you know, NDSU has the two national championships and the 28-2 record in the last 2 years?
I think they expect to win the game. But I also think, you know, they know it's not just, you know, this isn't Missouri State. Which, you know, it's not that kind of team. You know, I think they recognize that. You know, the K-State fans are, they're pretty knowledgeable about the game, and, you know, they've had to be over the years. You know, I think they respect them, but they expect to win the game as well. They think this K-State team can, I think most people feel like they could win 8 or 9 games, maybe even 10 games this year if they can steal one from somebody.
All right, final question I have for you, Josh, before I let you go. Prediction. I mean, maybe you're not in the game of predicting, but do you see K-State winning this game, or do you think NDSU can pull out the upset?
I think K-State wins. I think K-State offensively, I mean, I don't think the Bison want to get into a, you know, a track meet. I just don't think that would be best suited for them personally. I think K-State would win that if they got into a track meet. I think they can put some points on the board. I don't think this defense is proven enough, you know, to really say, well, they're going to lock them down or anything. You know, I think this game, it could be decided by, you know, I think it could be a 2-touchdown game, very easily a 2-touchdown game.
Josh, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much for sitting down with me and talking some K-State NDSU football. Can't wait for this game to kick off.
I know, it's just around the corner.
It'll be fun.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Josh Kinder, the Manhattan Mercury sports editor, the guy who knows the most about Kansas State. Okay, Brad, after listening to that interview, let's do our own breakdown of Kansas State, North Dakota State. August 30th kickoff. How do you envision it going?
You know, I thought it was interesting. One of the things that he said that really caught my ear was that it really doesn't matter who plays quarterback, this team's still going to score. And I thought that was interesting. I know they got one of the top JUCO transfers coming in. The number one, I think, Waters, number one JUCO quarterback in the country.
Yeah, he
in.
Was offensive player of the year in JUCO
yeah,
last year.
I mean, so, you know, he's interesting. The fact that they're going to play two quarterbacks in general tells me that they don't have you don't have a ton of confidence in one if you're looking at playing two.
Yeah, I see that. That to me is kind of interesting too. Because
so I thought that was just an interesting juxtaposition there, that it, on one hand, they're going to play two quarterbacks, and on the other hand, I think they're going to put up a ton of points. I mean, just usually those two things don't go hand in hand.
Well, when you return all five offensive linemen, you return, I think, your best wideout, your best running back from last year. The offensive side of the ball for Kansas State, they lose Colin Klein, which is a huge name, but really, they don't lose the most significant part of the team, which is that offensive line. You go into camp and go, the offensive line is taken care of. They know what they're doing. They know the scheme. They know everything that they're supposed to do. Now it's a matter of, can we get the quarterbacks up to speed on the playbook? And that, to me, is why you play two quarterbacks, because maybe Sam's has a great grasp of it, but the passing game that he brings isn't what Jake Waters can bring. And for Jake Waters, he doesn't have the type of speed running-wise that Sam's does. And so you get both flavors when you play both quarterbacks at the same time. I'm not really a huge fan of playing two quarterbacks.
No.
I'm not going to lie. I think the only time it's really worked in the history of football ever in a big stage is maybe Florida.
Chris Leak, Tim Tebow.
Yeah, and they won the national championship. And even when you'd ask them who was the starting quarterback, it was Chris Leak.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Tebow had a handful of plays, but very successful on them, and it worked out for Florida. When you go into a season and go, boy, I don't know who's going to start here for us, it becomes a little bit of an issue, too.
And then everyone's asking you about it, and it's always hanging there. So, yeah, I think that's interesting. It's strength versus strength.
Yep.
Their offense versus our defense, and then, you know, I guess if you want to call it weakness or whatever, but the less strong of the two will be going against each other as well. So it's going to be interesting. I expect I will pick the Bison to lose the game.
Yeah, me too.
And I mean, I think, you know, when you're going up against a Big 12 team that was in a BCS Bowl last year, even if they've lost almost all of their defense, I think you still have to give them that respect. But as we've said, I just don't see them getting blown out. The one person who this game for NDSU is the biggest for is
Brock Jensen.
Okay, interesting
to me, because he's going to have an opportunity to be successful against a defense that loses a lot. And even Kinder said in there that the secondary is the biggest weakness that Kansas State has. NDSU has an opportunity to expose it. They're going to run the ball the same amount that they're going to run against any other team. But I think that this game is going to come down to a couple drives that if Jensen can make some plays on with his arm, not so much his legs, but with his arm, then NDSU can turn the tides. But to me, Brock Jensen, most important player in this game. Do you believe that?
Or I disagree. I'm going to say Marcus Williams.
Why?
A couple reasons.
Okay.
From a larger picture standpoint, this is his showcase.
NFL.
I mean, this is his NFL showcase game here. There's just going to be some of those drives because of I don't expect Brock Jensen to finish off as many drives in this game as I will the rest of the season. I think that it's going to be the same thing. Their Bison are going to have to force a couple of turnovers, and I think Williams is going to be that guy. So that's why I really think this game, most important guy for me is going to be Williams.
The other thing I want to address before we move on here, Kinder in that interview said he can see it being a 2-touchdown game. And he had said previous that, the fans of Kansas State are really knowledgeable. They know what they're going up against. But when you say something like that, to me, it would lead me to believe that you still don't think NDSU has the talent level to hang with Kansas State by a touchdown, 6 points, 3 points. I disagree wholeheartedly. I don't think it's going to be a blowout.
Two touchdowns isn't a blowout.
Well, it isn't a blowout, but it depends on how the course of the game goes. I mean, if it was like the touchdown the last second and they won, you know, 13 by 13 points, you're going, well, it wasn't really a 13-point game. But I didn't get to that point.
I didn't get the feeling that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe when you were talking to him, did you get the feeling that he thought that was a best-case scenario for NDSU?
No.
That's just it.
He just kind of felt that that was how it was going to end up.
Yeah.
And I think it was more, I could see it being a 2-touchdown game, but it wasn't, you know, I really don't think NDSU is going to be 2 touchdowns at the best that they're going to lose by. He didn't really feel that way. But again, when you're looking at it from an FBS level to an FCS level, the disparity between talent is there, but to me, this game just is so perfect for NDSU because they lose so much on defense. They lose the best player
you're catching them at the best time.
And you think of the last 4 years I'm going to go ahead and say lucky NDSU has been catching teams at the right time. Think of Kansas, new coach. Quarterback situation was bad.
Yep.
Same thing with them. They didn't know who was going to start the quarterback back in 2010. They beat them in probably the ugliest game they've played in a long time, 6-3. And then you think of Minnesota, new coach, new system, a lot of guys really wanting to go after the
Although,
University
to be fair,
Minnesota.
Has there really been a bad time to catch the Gophers in the last decade?
This is true. Colorado State last year, same situation, new coach. And now for Kansas State, they completely new defense. So, but we're both under the impression that NDSU will lose this game.
So what would, if we were Vegas here, what do we set the spread at?
3.5
3.5
Or is that too close for you? Will you go 6.5 then?
The number I had, I was between 6.5 or 7.5
Okay. Well, okay, 6.5 over or under. What do you think point spread's going to be?
I would probably take the over and hope to be proved wrong.
I'm going to go ahead To me, I think it's a 4-point game, maybe three. Okay. So I'm taking the under. And we'll put it in the ongoing
wager. Is that an ongoing wager?
Lock it in.
I'll take that. Lock it in.
So, okay. Yeah, we both think Kansas State comes away with the win. And I think NDSU, what, covers the spread, essentially, is how that works.
That's what you would say.
Yeah, yep. I guess. I have no idea how that stuff works because I don't really gamble.
I don't either, but I think it's fascinating. We'll get to that when we talk some NFL here, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's one more local topic before we move on to national. NDSU men's basketball team completely off season, but they added a team with some name recognition to their schedule in the St. Mary's Gales. Is that their nickname?
That is the Gales. Yep, they're the Gales.
Do you like this gauntlet that Coach Saul Phillips has put out there for this team? I mean, Notre Dame, Ohio State, now St. Mary's, which is a very well-known team that qualifies for the NCAA tournament year in, year out. Do you like the gauntlet?
Love it. Why? Love it. You don't get better by playing teams like Jamestown or Mayville or Valley City. No offense to those teams, but if you're at NDSU and you've got aspirations to not only go to the tournament, but hopefully win a tournament game, you don't schedule these kind of teams. And if you're looking at the difference between a 13 and a 14 seed, that could be a win or two against other tournament qualified teams. That can be the difference between that higher or lower seed. So that's what I think. If they can grab a win or two there and move that seed line up a little bit, I think that's a big deal.
I completely agree with you. This team is pretty much destined, poised to make the NCAA tournament out of the Summit League. Denver's good. They were good last year. I want to say in the Mountain West Conference, or was it?
No, it was the WAC.
It was the WAC, I believe. It was the WAC. It was in Denver that they were in last year, but they were good last year in the WAC. NDSU putting together a tough schedule for the men's basketball team that's picked to be really good this year. I like it too. I have no qualms with what Saul Phillips is doing. All right, let's move on to some
national
topics. And last week we talked about the AFC and the NFL. Picked our division winners, and as you and I were kind of talking there while the Josh Kinder interview was playing, we didn't pick wildcard winners for the NFC. And I'm looking back at the ongoing wager here on our show, our blog. You didn't pick, and I didn't pick wildcard winners. So let's do that quick. Let's just go through AFC. You, White Shadow, had the Patriots, Steelers, Texans, and Broncos winning. Who do you have as wild cards from the AFC?
I'm going to go with Baltimore.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah.
I think I know who mine are going to be, but
probably Indianapolis.
Okay.
I don't feel good about it.
Well, I mean, who else would there be, though? Pittsburgh?
Cincinnati?
Well, you already have the Steelers. Oh, yeah, the Bengals for you would be.
Cincinnati was really the other team I'm looking at. Other people think the Dolphins will be improved, but yeah, I'm not seeing that.
How? Because they got Mike Wallace?
Woo.
Yeah, woo, woo. No, to me, I agree. Ravens, Colts. There's no question to me. Those wild card, and we don't have them doing much playoff-wise anyways. Of course, the Ravens.
We did way too much agreeing on the AFC.
We really did.
The only team I think I have Pittsburgh in, and you have Cincy.
Yep,
yeah,
that was
that's it.
And then we both have AFC champs as differing. I have the Texans, you have the Broncos.
I have Denver. Okay.
But I think we're going to disagree a lot here on the NFC when we come to predicting. All right, so I'll let you start, and then I will follow up, and we'll start with the NFC East.
Which is the division that I feel the least confident in, because I think this is the one division where I could legitimately see all four teams winning it at some point.
Really? Even the Eagles?
I could, yeah.
All right.
I could. There's more ifs with the Eagles than the other teams, but I mean they've still got a lot of talent on offense.
You know what? The Eagles.
Wrong.
I'm not picking them. You can't call me wrong if I'm not picking them.
Even to have them in the conversation. Even to have them in the conversation.
Whatever. Anyway, I'm probably going to pick the Giants. They're just consistent year in and year out, and I mean, they're just always there.
Okay.
So I don't feel great about it, but
okay. I'm gonna go Dallas Cowboys
because you're yeah.
Sure. Call me a homer if you will. I don't.
You're not
care.
Really a homer since you know you live in North Dakota, but that's your team.
Yeah, that's my. Those are my boys. I'm gonna go Cowboys. To me, make or break year for Tony Romo. big contract, a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah, and he's done so well when he's had a lot of pressure on him in the past.
I want a division championship, and I would like to see
And your head coach is your coaching situation so great. And gosh, your owner and GM have been, I mean, just embraced all the new technology that's out there and all the stats and been really smart
my
about
God,
the players
they've
grabbed.
Are you still talking?
Oh my gosh. Thanks, Hank.
Yeah. I'm going to go Cowboys.
Okay.
So I like them.
I'll take your money there.
I like the NFC. I like them in the NFC East. Let's move on to the NFC North.
It's real hard to pick against Green Bay. I mean, they're good.
They are good.
You're going to pick against them. I can tell by the look on your face. But, I don't like to as a Vikings fan. I don't like to, but Aaron Rodgers, he's good. He's really, really good.
And you can go back to the fact that it's like, how do you pick against, say, maybe Eli Manning in the NFC East because he's
Aaron
won
Rodgers
a couple.
Aaron Rodgers is better than Eli
Manning. Well, no, I'm saying when you look at the division itself, Eli Manning, maybe not good, but he wins football games and he's led the Giants to some Super Bowls. So
I like the Packers pick.
Aaron Rodgers. I go Vikings, in my opinion.
Gross. Really?
Yes. I think.
I have warning signals screaming regression that this team got lucky last year and that they're going to regress.
The quarterback situation
8-8
is really
8-8.
Wow.
Hello.
8-8?
8-8.
No.
Yes.
I think they're better than last year because
you think they're better than last year? You think this team's winning 11 games?
I think they can.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
We'll get into it next week because we're going to talk Vikings
week. Oh, there will be wager. There's a wager here.
Yeah, we'll talk Vikings next week. We'll break it down. But I think the Vikings win this division. I think they win the NFC North based on the fact the Packers defensively aren't the greatest. Their offensive line is a little bit pear-shaped right now. And the wideout.
You love that term, pear-shaped.
I do. I stole it from PA.
Okay.
Complete. Yeah, you know, I took it from him, but I use it a lot. And people get annoyed with me for using it, so I'm going to keep using it. I think the Vikings have a good opportunity to win this division. The Bears, Jay Cutler is not a winner, and the Lions stink. So Vikings, 11 games, maybe even 10, but I think they're better than last year in the fact that they'll get 10, 11 wins and win the division.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Moving on. Let's go to the AFC South.
I got Atlanta.
Yeah, me too.
I could see a couple other teams, and it seems like this division flip-flops every year, and that's been pretty well documented.
But there isn't really anybody else in this division that can take it. I mean,
New Orleans has got a chance.
If Sean Payton's back, he's going to lead them to the promised land again. No.
Head coach is a big deal in the NFL.
All right.
So
Defense is a big deal in the NFL, too, and the Saints don't really have that. So
not as much in today's NFL, at least not regular season. Playoffs more so than regular season.
Right, but I've got
Atlanta. Yeah. I love Matt Ryan.
Steven Jackson, Matt Ryan, Michael Turner, Tony Gonzalez.
Their offensive line is the only thing that worries me. Their offensive line was bad, really bad last year, and they still put up a lot of points.
I'm going Falcons, too. Yep. That's just no question there. San Francisco 49ers in the NFC West, correct?
Yeah.
Yes? Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Seahawks are good, but if Percy Harvin was still healthy, you'd go, boy, this offense could be really dynamic. And now you go, well, who are their wideouts?
And, I mean, now basically they've got the same team that they did last year, which was really good.
Same thing. You're right. But to me, Percy Harvin made that team better than the Niners. Yeah. He's out for a good amount of time. And because of that, you're going, okay, the Niners have an opportunity to make a lot of hay.
Yeah.
So, yep, we both agree on that. Let's take care of the wild cards right now. Who do you think the two wild cards out of the NFC will be?
I'm going to go with Seattle. I think Seattle will be one of those teams.
Okay.
Again, I still think they're good. The other one I think is going to be somebody that we have that kind of comes out of nowhere a little bit.
Who?
I don't know. That's
well,
just
you
it.
Have to pick.
I mean, I have to pick, and I'm going to go a little bit more chalky than that and probably go.
So overall, you think it's going to be somebody that's, you know, we don't even think of. Like, it's going to be
it
the
always
Lions
happens. There's
or
always,
the Panthers.
It always happens where there's those teams every year that come up that we just don't see coming.
But for the ongoing wager part of it, you're going
for my
chalk.
Pick, I think I'm going to go a little more chalky. I think I'm going to go Washington.
You don't even have the Vikings in the playoffs? You
no.
really think the regression?
Eight. Yes. I think they massively overachieved last year.
Hello?
Massively overachieved.
Hello?
Again, 8-8. We'll talk. We can talk about it more next week. But no, I do not have the Vikings in the playoffs.
Okay, for my picks, wild card wise, I have the Seahawks like you do, and I have the Packers.
Yeah,
and, you know, I think Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers is good enough. I think to me, the Redskins are the team that does regress.
I could see that
because the wide receiver situation there isn't great.
Yeah,
for RG3, who knows if he's going to be ready for Week One? He looked pretty good in working out.
He's going to be ready for Week One.
But here's the other thing.
My sources tell me.
Okay, your NFL sources. Did you see that he got fined by the NFL for wearing
$10,000? Yeah,
that shirt on the field to practice in a game he'd even play in.
Talking about practice. We didn't talk about game.
Practice.
Talking about practice.
I hate the NFL for reasons like that. I mean, just the overseeing group of it, you know, kind of the head honchos of it. I love football and I love the NFL in general, but that stuff to me is just, it's petty. It's so petty.
Yes. Here's the thing. I get it because it's all a matter of where do you draw the line? Because if you when you start letting, okay, well, some of these things go, then who knows what people like the Chad Ochocincos of the world, those kind of guys. It's just a matter of where they draw the line.
But it's preseason.
I get it. I understand. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just giving the other side where you have to draw the line somewhere, and they've chosen to draw the line where we're just not going to allow anything.
Still, to me, it's really dumb. I didn't like it at all. So those are our picks. Who do you think is going to win the NFC Championship game and will face who did you have again?
Denver.
Who face your Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl? Eli? Do you have Eli and
no,
the Giants?
No.
The brothers Super Bowl?
No.
The brothers, oh, my goodness.
Back-to-back brothers Super Bowls?
Do you think the minds of people that cover this stuff on a national level, the mind would just be blown? I mean, they wouldn't even do anything story-wise. There would be no sub-story. It would be Manning
there
brothers.
There always is. I mean,
they would be falling all over each other. Or if the Patriots made it, they would have to try and figure out a way that Tim Tebow would make a significant amount of plays in the game. It's those are the stories.
I mean, this is more what I want to see happen than what I think will happen. I'm gonna pick Atlanta because I like Matt Ryan and I like Tony Gonzalez in what we assume is his final year instead of last year's final year
and he comes back.
I really want to see Atlanta win, so I'm going to pick them just for that reason.
For me, I believe it'll be the 49ers. I like the 49ers. I like Colin Kaepernick. I like that team. I think that they go, and I think it'll be a 49ers-Texans Super Bowl, and we can pick the Super Bowl next week. We can do it right now. Who do you think will win the Super Bowl?
Next week. Tune in next week. That's a tease right there.
Oh, by the way. Because
I know your wagers are being hung on our opinions here. You want to hear that before you make your bets. Which is, by the way, when we're talking Vegas, I got the sheet of the preseason odds.
Oh,
as to Super Bowl.
Okay, what are the preseason odds? Where do our two teams fall? The Niners, the Broncos, the Texans, and the... Who did you have again for the NFC?
Falcons. Yeah. Broncos are 5-1. They're the favorites.
Okay. Well, because they pretty much have the easiest path.
Okay, here you go. Four teams that are less than 10-1 odds.
Okay.
Who do you think?
Okay.
I just gave you...
Four teams, so we've broken it down. I'm going to go ahead and think of...
I gave you Denver. I told you that Denver was favorite.
Denver, okay. Houston's got to be in there, too.
No.
Really?
12-1. They're sixth.
Niners?
Yep. 6-1.
Seahawks?
10-1, so no.
Boy.
They're fifth.
Are the Packers in there?
Packers at 8-1.
Really?
Yep.
Is the Patriots have to be in there too, which is just, okay.
And keep in mind that part of this is not necessarily who they think is the best. It's trying to get the money even.
Right.
So, you know, there's a little bit of that in there, but those are the four teams they have better than 10-1. San Francisco, Denver, New England, Green Bay.
And I only agree with two of those because I think the AFC is going to be a cakewalk when it comes to, I think there's just going to be two teams. I mean, we talked about it last week. The AFC is pretty watered down. And there isn't one team you go, boy, they are stacked. Look at the NFC.
Vegas likes the Steelers more than a lot of people do.
Well, it's because they're the Pittsburgh 18, Steelers.
But I understand that. But 18-1. Baltimore's 30-1.
Can I try and guess the four least likely teams on there? Or are there a group? There's five.
There's five that are either 100-1 or higher.
Okay. Let me try and do that. Oakland Raiders.
200-1.
Okay. St. Louis Rams?
No, 50-1, tied with the Vikings.
Oof. Are the Lions in the bottom there? Start from the bottom.
50-1
Now we're here. I'm trying to think of the Chiefs.
60-1
Browns.
60-1
How are the Browns 60? Oh, okay, so I've only got one right. The Raiders.
Sure have.
Trying to think of who else is bad out there. The Panthers.
No, come on. 40-1 You're going the wrong way.
I am going. The Cardinals.
There you go. 300-1
300-1
They're tied for the worst.
Give me the other ones because I'm stumbling around and it doesn't make
Jacksonville's,
good radio.
Yeah, Jacksonville's the other 300-1 team.
Okay.
Buffalo Bills, 100-1 Yeah. And Tennessee, 100-1
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised the Browns are there. What do the Browns have? Brandon Wheaton.
There's a lot of people that like the Browns this year.
Of course they do.
Peter King, who is a guy that oh, come on. Don't roll your eyes. Peter King's good stuff. I enjoy Peter King.
Okay, continue on. Peter
King
love.
I think he does a really good job and's got really good sources. He went around to a lot of the training camps and really liked what he saw from
the Browns.
Cleveland. Yeah.
Here's what I do to get ready for the NFL season. I go on deadspin.com and I read Why Your Team Sucks 2013 edition.
Okay.
That to me is how I get ready for the NFL. They have yet to do the Cowboys and I cannot wait because I know this guy's just going to rip them apart.
It's not hard. I mean, it's kind of low hanging fruit.
Wow. He did the Vikings, and it was funny. He said that, who's the offensive coordinator for the Vikings?
Exactly.
I can't remember. Doesn't matter. But he said that the Vikings did this last year. Run, run, pass thingy. You never want to see him do pass thingy ever.
I mean.
That was pretty much it. So, yep. Okay, so those are our NFC picks. We're going into overtime here when it comes to time, but I'm pretty sure we don't really have much left to discuss. I had a couple topics here. Well, actually, the last question I want to ask you, too, because I got into it with my girlfriend's brother over the weekend, Ichiro Suzuki. The question.
You weren't going to go Little League, huh?
No, I'm not going to go Little League because we'll just leave the kids out of it.
Okay.
You know?
Be nice to the kids.
Yeah,
the kids
exactly.
Okay.
Ichiro Suzuki got his 4,000th professional baseball hit of his career earlier this week. Do you see Ichiro Suzuki? I'll say this. He hasn't had what the milestone mark is for all hitters, 3,000 hits yet in Major League Baseball, but he played for however many years over in Japan.
Yep.
Do you believe Ichiro Suzuki is a Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer? How about that? First ballot Hall of Famer.
First ballot's going to be interesting because writers are very protective of that first ballot Hall of Fame status. So I'm probably going to say no to that. It'll be the one time that the writers embrace the sabermetrics guys because never took walks. His on base percentage isn't great for a leadoff hitter and all this stuff. The guy was a machine. Is he a Hall of Famer? Yes. First ballot, no.
Okay, I disagree with you. I believe he's a first ballot Hall of Famer because he has something like 2,700 hits in Major League Baseball. He has probably two more years left in him. What do you think? Maybe.
I mean, he's 39, right?
And he's going to play until he gets 3,000 hits. I really truly believe that. And I think teams will give him a chance till he gets there. But he's been digressing talent-wise as the years have gone on, which is very natural for that to see. You see that, A. B, think of all the performance-enhancing drugs that he had to see go through. Started out in 2001, really kind of the peak of the PEDs. Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, these guys that were prolific home run hitters, RBI guys that drove in runs, will not get in. Ichiro is a singles hitter, and when it's all said and done, probably going to be top three greatest hitters of all time in Major League Baseball. Had the single season record for hits in a season.
Time out. What do you mean top three greatest hitters?
Just in the overall span of, how do I put this? Span of his career, you think of what he's done.
Not even close.
You don't think so?
Not even close.
I might have stretched that.
Yeah, statement. Holy smokes. Wow.
Is there an erase button?
Yeah. Wow. Not even close.
That was, hang on.
Do you got like a whoopsie drop in there somewhere?
I don't have
something?
A whoopsie drop, but I feel like I should have an idiot talk.
Yeah.
I feel like that was here. This is me.
Wrong, wrong,
yeah,
wrong,
there you go.
Wrong, 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 wrong.
So we take back top three greatest hitters of all time. It's like you say things and then you realize
took me a minute to. It's like, wait, did you just say what I thought you said?
Okay. Oh boy, yeah, right. Completely wrong that I say. But regardless, he's
was a hitting machine. He'd got hits. He was unorthodox, but he put the ball where he's got 500 some steals. He's a Hall of Famer, which the whole idea of are you a first ballot or a second ballot Hall of Famer is just so
it doesn't really
old
matter
and
the
curmudgeonly
end.
To the for Major League Baseball.
But it will be a discussion that comes up. And yeah. Here's the other thing you have to remember. He's the greatest position player, Japanese position player in Major League history, which I think will give him some kind of clout because leagues, major leagues like to recognize that kind of stuff. When you think of basketball.
The leagues do, but again, it's not the league that's putting him in. It's writers.
Man, I think the writers will respect him too. And I think the PEDs will play a major part in that because it's obvious the guy didn't take him.
Is it? Can we really?
You think of a singles hitter, a guy who was great with contact, I don't even think he has 100 homers in
Francisco
his career.
Francisco Cervelli.
Okay, so Francisco Cervelli took them, yes. But when you look at good players that took PEDs, Ichiro does not fit into that stereotype.
He doesn't,
and
fit into
he's starting to break down towards the end of his career, which with PED users, especially Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez as well, you saw him stay at that high plateau as they got into the late 30s because of the performance.
I don't think anybody is above suspicion. I don't think you can say
he definitely didn't. Well, if he's not, then he's right there. I mean, he's very close to being
I agree with you that the public perception of not having anything like that attached to him is helpful, but I still think the writers are going to say, we're going to make you sit a year. And I don't agree with it.
I don't either.
I think he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer because you're either a Hall of Famer or you're not.
Right.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Okay, I see that, and I think you're right. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. I think he'll be first ballot, and I think they'll take the...
Can we put that on the ongoing wager? I think we'll be doing this show,
boy,
whatever, 7 years from
yeah,
now?
Yeah, 7 years from now, because he's got to wait 5 years after he retires. I'll call you up.
Okay.
If he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, I'll call you up and be like, you know what? If it tips the scale somehow, if I lose this ongoing fall season by like 1 point or something weird like that, I'll call you up and be like, guess what, buddy? Ichiro, first ballot Hall of Famer. You owe me something. I don't know what it's
okay.
going to be, but we
All
can
right.
go back and look
All
at
right.
it. So that wraps up the 008 podcast for the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Again, Daniel Pinto Gunnarsson. You can follow me at Pinto KFGO on Twitter. You can follow Brad, the White Shadow Jones.
At the Bison Guy.
Talk to us on Facebook. Email us, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. We're on iTunes as well, so you can download us there. I will be heading down, a reminder, to Kansas State on Friday, August 30th. I'll be helping out with the Jack Michaels Show on 740 The Fan. I'll also be helping out with the Mike McFeely Show on KFGO. The Jack Michaels Show is from noon to 1 that Friday. And then the Mike McFeely Show on the Mighty 790 KFGO is from 2 to 5 p.m. Also, Bison Football, home of it, KFGO. Make sure and tune in. Ryan Gellner with the tailgating show. I believe he kicks off at 6. Kickoff for the game is 7:30, so your Bison pregame gets going at 7 with Scott Miller. Phil Hansen is back in the booth. Everybody's back for another year, another round. It'll be good. And make sure and check out KFGO.com and 740thefan.com. Pinto's Points. We'll have a lot of stuff up. It's going to be fun. Big week.
Football's here.
It's all starting.
It's here.
It's all starting. Here's the other thing I have to mention before we go. Okay. We haven't even talked national college football at all.
No, we haven't.
That's okay because I think
next week's going to be football, unless something comes up big in the meantime.
We'll be talking to, I'll try to track down the Ferris State guy and see what he says about the Division II team.
Bueller.
And then we'll be talking Vikings as well. So it's all good things coming up. But again, thank you so much for joining us on the 008 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show on 740thefan.com and KFGO.com. And have a wonderful rest of your day. You've been.